However you do it, cover your mouth and your nose when you go outside. We all have to protect each other by protecting ourselves. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our amazing team is working from home. My condolences to our Democracy Now! Fellow, Adriano Contreras, who just lost his beloved uncle, Gilberto Castillo, who was 92 years old. Adriano, our condolences go out to your whole family. All the very best, and to your aunt. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood, Adriano Contreras, and Maria Tarasena. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KBOO Portland.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
Today, we continue our COVID-19 coverage. And on both the environmental and poverty fronts, Forest Defense is doing a tree sit in Humboldt County in Northern California. They are opposing logging in the area. And on the homeless front, we speak with Anthony Prince of the Homeless Union and the Poor People's Campaign. Also from Detroit, Michigan, another COVID-19 hotspot, we speak with anti-poverty warrior and campaigner Maureen Taylor with Michigan Welfare Rights and the National Welfare Rights Union. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. The coronavirus pandemic has now rolled over into the month of April, impacting billions of people around the world. As of Thursday morning, April 2nd, there have been 48,284 reported deaths and 951,000 confirmed cases globally around the world. The United States now has the third highest number of deaths. At the time, we are on the air of 5,137, and the highest number of confirmed cases, over 216,000. The director of the World Health Organization has said he's deeply concerned about the rapid escalation and global spread of the infection. U.S. state and federal governments, meanwhile, are still struggling to get the equipment they need and handling the crisis. And on the economic front, a record 6.6 million people in the United States have applied for unemployment last week, a sign of economic collapse triggered by coronavirus. And in terms of Donald Trump's approval rating, less than half approve of the job he has done so far, according to a new survey from the Associated Press and NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. This, as Donald Trump has admitted that the U.S. government's emergency stockpile of protective equipment is nearly exhausted because it is ill-equipped to deal with the extraordinary demands of the coronavirus pandemic. And while Donald Trump has assured states that thousands of ventilators will remain at ready, thousands more are in storage. They have been unmaintained or otherwise unusable, according to the New York Times. On Tuesday, March 31st, the White House released new projections that between 100,000 and 240,000 people in the United States will likely die as a result of coronavirus, even if current social distancing guidelines are maintained. Now Donald Trump is resisting calls to issue a national stay-at-home order in order to stem the spread of the virus, despite the projection that tens of thousands are likely to die by the disease. In response, states are increasingly pushing shutdown orders of their own. Florida has just made such an order after resisting for quite some time. On Wednesday alone, the United States top 1,000 coronavirus deaths in a single day for the first time. This is thousands of hospitals around the country are struggling to get the resources they desperately need, like ventilators. In New York, the top doctor at Rikers Island Jail has announced that in just 12 days, confirmed cases of coronavirus has soared from 1 to nearly 200, this according to The Guardian. A new national study released by Covered California reveals that healthcare premiums could increase as much as 40% next year if the pandemic results in millions of people in the United States needing hospital stays. The one-year projected costs in the national commercial market range from $34 billion to $251 billion for testing, treatment, and care specifically related to the coronavirus. And meanwhile, the Trump administration is doing everything they can to destroy what is known as Obamacare and refusing to reopen the Obamacare exchanges. And the Trump administration ramping up tensions abroad, provoking war, it seems, or at least beating the drums of war in the Middle East and Venezuela. The Pentagon has ordered military commanders to plan for an escalation of U.S. combat in Iraq, according to The Intercept, issuing a directive last week to prepare a campaign to destroy what it calls an Iranian-backed militia group. And after placing a bounty on the head of the democratically elected Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on unsubstantiated drug trafficking charges, as you heard in our news headlines, he is now sending Navy ships towards Venezuela to beef up what the administration calls counter-narcotics operation, this in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic. So there you have it. Also, in other news, in Malaysia, a coalition of 51 organizations and trade unions are calling on their government to make the people to make coronavirus an occupational disease under law, which would ensure protection for all workers and their families. Meanwhile, people in the United States have responded to the coronavirus with a record-breaking number of gun purchases. This according to new government data. We wonder what that's about. More than 3.7 million total firearm background checks were conducted through the FBI's background check system in March, the highest number on record in more than 20 years. And also, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the leading expert on infectious diseases in the U.S., is now receiving enhanced personal security after receiving threats from right-wing conspiracy theorists who claim that he is working against the re-election of Donald Trump. Let us go now to a clip. Actually, why don't we now go to the Redwood Forest defense guest who is ready to speak with us. There is an occupation going on. People are fighting back. Even in the middle of the coronavirus, they're fighting back and they're making connections with the pandemic. So I'd like to welcome Lupine, an active member with the Redwood Forest Defender. Lupine, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so Lupine, tell us what is going on. Why is there a tree sit going on? What is the significance of it, and how are you connecting the tree sit and what you all are doing in protecting the forest with the coronavirus?
Well, I'm currently sitting probably about 70 feet up in a redwood tree on the edge of a clear cut.
Wow.
And Green Diamond started logging out here less than a month ago, so they've been logging in the midst of the pandemic. And when my friends and I discovered that they had started logging here, we came out and started occupying trees. And this forest here is adjacent to Strawberry Rock, which, to my understanding, is of cultural significance to the Yurok people. And Green Diamond uses clear-cut practices here. So on a broad scale, it's I think it's worth opposing their practices. And then especially during this time, the pandemic is a global crisis, and I think Green Diamond should let their workers stay home with their families with full pay. And I see a parallel between our reaction to this crisis and the climate crisis. And I think that a moratorium on logging, and especially clear-cut logging, in the midst of the climate crisis is also in order, as the climate crisis is the second existential threat that we're facing on a global level.
Wow. So you are literally up in a tree at the moment. So you're not worried about social distancing. You're pretty
indeed.
Much that's as far as you could get in terms of social distancing. But tell us, you know, the particular area where you are, there's been a long history of resistance in that area and in Humboldt County generally. Late last year, the Sojourner Truth team, we were also in Shawnee National Forest, where we met some people from Earth First and others who were involved in an historic sit-in that happened in Shawnee National Forest, including John Wallace, who also did a tree sit at the time. But in terms of this specific Strawberry Rock area, tell us about the history of resistance that has happened there.
Well, Green Diamond filed logging plans here several years ago, and there was at that time several years of resistance and folks occupying trees. I think for about 6 years, folks occupied trees out here, and Green Diamond essentially chose not to log the units where the tree sitters were occupying, and they let that THP expire without logging certain areas, and then they have just refiled a timber harvest plan to cut like those same areas once again. So the resistance that happened here before was able to protect specific areas, and now there's some parts of those areas are still under threat.
Yeah, and they talk about even aged management when it comes to the cutting that they're doing. What are they talking about? What's the difference, if there is any, between even age management and clear cutting?
Even age management, I think, is kind of just a rebranding, because the public doesn't like to hear the word clear cutting. Clear cutting is a type of even age management, and Green Diamond does use clear cutting, and they say in their logging plans that they are using clear cutting. So I'm sitting, the tree that I'm occupying right now is on the edge of probably at least a 10-acre clear cut, and it's. I wish I could show you a picture, because it's devastating.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, in my neighborhood where there's gentrification going on, and in fact, right next door to me, they were building a new home, and they cut down several trees that were there. There were palm trees, trees nevertheless. And I can't tell you, it felt like a massacre to me. It was just so hurtful to see those trees cut down and gone. I'd watched them grow from the time they were very, very small. So I can't imagine the view you're looking at right now with the 10-acre clear cut. I mean, in the press release you all put out, you call it a slaughterhouse. Lupine.
Yeah, it looks really bad. And it appeared that they were ready to cut the rest of this unit as well. Yesterday morning, the loggers were here to work, and they saw that there was a person in a tree, and they left.
Yeah, and tell us, too, about the relationship with the destruction of forests in this way, and the habitat and the environment generally, not only in terms of the animal or two-legged populations, the insects, but also to people, Lupine.
Yeah, well, I think all of us, it's important for all of us to spend time outside, spend time in wild places for our sanity. And I think, especially in this area, there's a really strong tribal presence, and the tribes are still very connected to the lands and are fighting for their lands, and are doing work like the Yurok tribe, bringing back the condor, and that's inspiring to me. And I think possibly the impetus for some of the forest defense that happened here was the tribes fighting to prevent Green Diamond from dynamiting Strawberry Rock itself. For gravel for roads, and
right.
As far as the conservation, beyond our human relationships to it, the conservation value of this forest, a number of listed endangered species call this land home, call the land that Green Diamond supposedly owns home, and I want to fight for them too. In the midst of the sixth mass extinction, it feels especially important to protect habitat for listed species.
Right, and you right now are in a tree sit platform, raised, you know, up in the canopy there. Two things: how long do you plan on staying there, and also what inspired you personally to get involved with, to take this kind of action?
As far as the first question, it's hard to know exactly how long. The timber harvest plan that includes this unit still has many years in which they could cut it before it expires. As far as what inspired me personally to get involved, I feel like it brings me a great joy to spend time in the forest.
Yeah.
And to climb trees, I think, is a privilege, to see the canopy that other creatures live in every day and get to see, but us humans hardly ever get to see the tops of these trees, and it's amazing to see what's up in the top of a redwood tree.
Yeah, listen, it brings me great joy and healing also to be in the forest, the rare occasions that I can be. And there are others out there. You have a support network out there with you as well, practicing social distancing, of course, Lupine.
Indeed.
Okay.
Yes, we're practicing social distancing, using hand sanitizer and masks, but we're supporting each other.
Right. Well, I imagine for our listeners who want to support what you're doing, calling on Green Diamond Resource Company to stop the logging, they can go to the website of the Redwood Forest Defenders. And Lupine, you stay safe and warm, and we really want to thank you for helping to protect the forest, which is a benefit to all of us. Thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Right. Okay. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. People fighting back in all kinds of ways. And the issue of homelessness, which is a growing crisis nationally, but also in California itself, homeless people are organizing themselves. The National Union of the Homeless has been revived, so to speak, and existing now in a number of cities across the country, including in California. And I would like to welcome now to our show Anthony Prince, who is involved with the Homeless Union and also with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Anthony Prince, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us, Margaret. It's good to hear your voice.
Yeah, and Anthony, first, before I forget, because I do want you to talk a bit about the homeless crisis and in particular some of what is happening in California, but what you know is happening in different parts of the country. But there's an important event happening today, and in this new world of the coronavirus, it's an online event. Tell us about that.
Yes, Margaret. This today, actually at 10 a.m., beginning at 10 a.m. Pacific time, and then across the country, 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have what we call a national press call and teach-in sponsored by the National Union of the Homeless. We're going to have on that call and on that Zoom webinar our president of our Sacramento Homeless Union, Crystal Sanchez. We will have the president of the Rochester, New York Homeless Union, Mr. Patrick Braswell, and we'll have the president of the Santa Cruz, California Homeless Union, Alicia Cool, and others. And we would hope that people could join us. Maybe at the end of our discussion, I can give you the Zoom information. But yes, that's going to be a very important event. We want to rapidly transfer what we're learning on the ground. I think we've made some significant breakthroughs that we want to go ahead and share with activists and fighters and homeless community leaders across the country.
Right. And Anthony Prince, what we're going to do is to post the information about the webinar actually on our social media so our listeners could check that out to get that kind of information. But Anthony Prince, according to the National Alliance to End Homelessness, there are over 550,000 people who experience homelessness in the United States on a single night. California, the highest homeless population in the country. The figures we are reading about are 129,000 experiencing homelessness on a single night. And millions of people now risk becoming homeless because of the crisis, the pandemic, and more people going into poverty. We just heard the figures this morning, 6.6 million people applying for unemployment. I mean, those figures are far greater than during the Great Depression that we have heard so much about. And then in Southern California, in Los Angeles County alone, there are over 59,000 homeless people on the street each and every night. So I'd like you to comment on that, some of the reasons you think this is happening, but also some of the initiatives the National Union of the Homeless have taken to push back against this. Anthony Prince.
Okay, well, first of all, I think that the figures that you recited there, Margaret, are, of course, official in our estimate and based on our statistical research, that those numbers are gross underestimates of what the actual numbers of homeless people amount to in the United States and in California. And that's because, at best, those figures reflect a point-in-time survey which only measures the visible homeless on the streets, of which there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. But it does not count, for the most part, people that are doubling, tripling up in apartments, people in their cars, in their RVs, students sleeping in the universities, children in foster care, shuffling back and forth, so-called welfare hotels, people on Section 8 vouchers who are staying in these, what we call these slum hotels. So there are far more people. In fact, the figure that we generally point to is that they're across the United States somewhere in the nature of 3.5 million, and that's an undercount. So we want to be clear when we talk about, we in the Homeless Union talk about homelessness, we're talking about a very broad segment of the American people. In terms of what we're doing to respond to the crisis, The best example we have, and we feel that they're at the cutting edge right now, is our Sacramento local. Sacramento, California, of course, is a state capital. We have 11,000 people homeless on the streets in Sacramento. And the leadership of our local union there under President Crystal Sanchez has been able to develop the loyalty and are now, we represent somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe 2,300 of those 11,000, perhaps more. We have gone right into the camps with hand sanitizer, with washing stations. There was not a single effort underway, not a single effort underway by the city or county of Sacramento, and there's still no effort underway by either one of those local government entities to provide the necessities in the camps. Instead, they're pursuing a policy of breaking up the camps, sweeping homeless off the street, and that's in direct violation of the guidelines of the Centers for Disease Control. So we have developed our own survival program in the streets. Crystal has been able to pull together a giant coalition. She has over 150 volunteers that she's pulled from as far away as Southern California, Northern California. We have over 50 doctors, medical students, nurses, public health workers from UC Davis. We have people constructing hand washing stations in their garages pursuant to a blueprint that we put online. And then our homeless union officers collect these washing stations and bring them right into the camps. So what we've been able to do is move into this inexcusable lethargy, inexcusable failure of the city of Sacramento to respond and provide these immediate life-saving materials to our most vulnerable. So we've we feel that we've we're creating a model here. We're, as you indicated, we are an outgrowth, an historical outgrowth of the original National Union of the Homeless 30, 35 years ago, which of course I was involved with, and you were too, Margaret, and a bunch of us old timers. But that was a very important segment of what we built 30 years ago, was the survival programs. And Black Panthers did the same thing. And by providing direct services, it also carried a political message of the failure of the system and the need to build a new one.
Yeah, and finally, I know you have to dash off. You've got a lot to do with this major online event happening. But the Union of the Homeless, you're also national partners with the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And, it does seem that given everything that we're seeing right now, if before this pandemic, people didn't understand what was happening in terms of how impoverished people have to live in the United States, and so many people who had considered themselves not to be impoverished, to be middle class or maybe even upper middle class, are finding now that they're out of work, they can't pay their rent, and they're struggling. Food banks are running out of food because you have so many people turning up at food banks. Those numbers have greatly increased. So I just, Anthony, just a final thought from you. My next guest is actually going to be Ms. Maureen Taylor, lifelong soldier in the war against poverty out of Detroit, Michigan. But to talk a little bit about the importance then of the collaboration and the working together of the Homeless Union and the Poor People's Campaign. Anthony Prince.
Well, yes, Margaret, as you know, we are a partner organization, the National Union of the Homeless, with the Poor People's Campaign. Reverend Liz Deal Harris, of course, is the national, one of the national co-chairs, along with Reverend Bishop Barber. And Liz got her start in the homeless struggles of Philadelphia. I met Liz, she was a teenager, and she was active in Philadelphia where we created the Philadelphia Union of the Homeless.
And also welfare rights. She came out of welfare rights as well.
Yes, she does. And so we are working in very close collaboration with the Poor People's Campaign. In fact, Reverend Liz will be on our webinar this morning or this afternoon for our listeners on the East Coast. And so we continue to move forward. You are absolutely right, Margaret, that the statement you made cannot be, that is a very profound observation. That we have 140 million people at or below the poverty line before this crisis hit, and the numbers of people who are going to be cast into the ranks of the dispossessed is going to create the conditions for a real movement in this country. And I don't mean just a handful of people on the street corner shaking their fist or waving a flag. I'm talking about a systemic crisis is what we're up against. And they want to save the economy, and we need to change the economy into an economy that uses this technology. They can build a home in 45 minutes on an assembly line, and we have people living in a cardboard box. So this is a dangerous situation, but it also creates an historic opportunity, and we hope that everyone will rise to the occasion. I know your listeners are already have that understanding, but we need to appreciate the moment that we're in and act accordingly.
Right, and again, that is a national online press call and teach-in, Homeless Not Helpless, How the Unsheltered Are Organizing to Survive the Coronavirus, and that is Thursday, today, April 2nd, and it starts at 10 in the morning Pacific Time, 12 noon Central Time, 1 p.m. East Coast Time, and we will put the link, the webinar link, on our website for our listeners who would like to participate. Anthony Prince, thank you so very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Take care.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We are going to take a station break. And when we return, longtime anti-poverty warrior out of Detroit, Michigan. Detroit is now a hot spot for the coronavirus. She is waiting in the wings to speak with us. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Now hearing is Ellis Marsalis at the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Center. As you heard in our news headlines, we lost Ellis Marsalis, the jazz pianist and the father of Wynton and Branford Marsalis, both prominent performers in their own right. He was a pianist and educator. He was 85 years old, and he died as a result of the coronavirus, of COVID-19. So that is the music of Ellis Marsalis. We are lifting him up and sending our sympathy to his entire family and all who knew and loved him. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you miss any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. If you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott and our handle on Twitter and Instagram at So True Radio. We're also worldwide on SoundCloud. We are heard throughout the nation and around the world any time of day or night. All of our back shows are also archived there. And today, actually, we'd like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in that great city of Detroit, Michigan. And internationally, we would like to give a shout out. Again, we're going to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners in France. Paris has one of the highest international listenership for Sojourner Truth. We can't quite figure out why, but we're very glad that they're there. We know there's a very, very high level of struggle and resistance going on, not only in Paris, but across France. And of course, now that movement and everyone, they're very hard hit by the coronavirus. Now, across the United States, millions of impoverished and low-income people are struggling to survive the economic impact of the coronavirus epidemic. In the United States, which now has over 5,000 reported deaths, the unemployment rate right now at 6.6% as of today, the highest figure even at the peak of the Great Depression in 1933, it was 24.9%. Now we're talking about 6.6 million people. Now, the economic impact of the virus could cost over 47 million jobs. This according to CNBC. There are also nearly 67 million people across the United States who are working in jobs that are at a high risk of layoffs. Meanwhile, food and housing insecurity also on the rise, especially among women, communities of color, elders. And according to Feeding America, there are 40 million people in the United States who are food insecure. Okay. And we talked about homelessness in our earlier segment. But we know, too, that although the recently passed $2 trillion stimulus package provides temporary economic relief for some impacted people, we all know that this isn't enough. And also that there are millions of people who are not going to get stimulus checks, including dependents older than 16 and people without a Social Security number, according to the Business Insider. Now, many of those in need will still face hurdles in getting the money that they've been told that they are supposed to get. Many low-income people and others who aren't usually required to file tax returns will need to do so in order to get their payments. This, according to the New York Times. Now, what our next guest will be focusing in on now more than ever, welfare rights that protect the poor and vulnerable people from destitution are needed. The right to welfare was taken away by former President Bill Clinton's 1996 welfare reform bill that was replaced by temporary assistance for needy families, which is known as TANF, which is workfare, a forced work program. Since then, the rolls have dramatically dropped and extreme poverty has increased. We have seen single mothers and their children among the fastest growing population among the homeless. Women are the fastest growing population going to prison. And among those, single mothers are overwhelmingly the majority. People are fighting back. There are rent strikes that are going on across the country now. Unwaged caregivers across the U.S. and across the world also picking up a call from the Green New Deal for Europe for a care income. And according to a report released by Oxfam in January 2020, women around the world performed 12.5 billion hours. You heard that right. Billion hours of unpaid labor each and every day in the United States. 41 million unwaged caregivers provide the equivalent of approximately $470 billion in to the economy. This according to a November 2019 report from the AARP Public Policy Institute. But yet, impoverished mothers on welfare are referred to as scroungers. They're not supported by either a lot of segments of the right or the left and are being blamed for all kinds of things. So we are really delighted and honored, actually, to have as our guest Maureen D. Taylor, a lifelong soldier in the war against poverty. She has served as the state chair of the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization since 1993, and she was elected treasurer of the National Welfare Rights Union back in the mid-90s. And the Michigan Welfare Rights Organization has worked with thousands of concerned residents and organizations to stop water, gas, and electricity shutoffs for thousands of low-income households in Detroit. Maureen Taylor, welcome back.
And thank you, and good morning, Ms. Margaret, and hello, California. All right.
All right, California and all the other states around the nation that will be hearing you, that carry your show, Maureen, and we'll be hearing your interview today. So, Maureen, first let's start with this. COVID-19, Detroit, where you're based now, a hot spot. Give us your thoughts of the situation on the ground there. Do you think that there has been adequate testing? I mean, what's going on in the most impoverished communities? How are they being impacted by all this?
Well, Ms. Margaret, there are a couple of things I'll share with you and and with your listeners. Two comments keep coming up. One of them is, we're all in this together. Well, that's not true. The number of people in the Detroit area and in Michigan, where Detroit is, that are on the list of individuals that have been diagnosed, along with individuals who have already passed away, are predominantly low-income workers, low-income people, moderate-income people. I think last night's numbers is that in Detroit, the virus has already infected almost 10,000. So we're at 9,000 plus in just Michigan, and over 2,200 of those 9,000 plus are just in the city of Detroit. We knew that this was coming, and we knew it because for several decades, and especially since 2014 in Detroit, Highland Park, and Hamtramck, we have been fighting these draconian mass water shutoffs. Now, I quoted the one piece, "We're in this together." That's not true. Nobody named Mellon, nobody named Rockefeller, nobody named Carnegie, none of them are on the affected or dead list. Now, they might be affected, they might be already dead, but when this thing first started, they ran off, took their private helicopters and their airplanes to their islands and to their gated communities, and Garcon leaves the house and goes down to the gate to pick the food up. So they already left. The other thing, the other message that I'll quote is that the first line of defense is that you must wash your hands against this COVID-19. Well, that turned out that that was an issue. While poor people were screaming, crying, begging, demanding, picketing, demonstrating, all these kinds of things, you have to stop these water shutoffs. You have to stop these water shutoffs. We are not going to go along with these continuous mass water shutoffs in the tens of thousands. That was going on, and nobody heard us. But, Miss Margaret, everybody heard that little bitty microbe named COVID-19. Everybody heard that. And now that we're into this horrible position behind New York, behind Los Angeles, number 3, 4, or 5, in terms of Michigan being one of the largest, having one of the most largest numbers of individuals affected by this plague, now the window of opportunity to restore water to tens of thousands of people, not just in Detroit. That's the dig. That keeps going on. The folks in Detroit are just stupid. We're illegal. We're criminal. We don't want to pay our bills. And half the times we're too stupid to be able to figure out what to do or where to go to get help. Now the truth is starting to come out, where it's now clear that Detroit, the Detroit Water Department, provides service, water, and many times sanitation services to more than 120 cities, including Flint, including Hamtramck, including Highland Park, including Benton Harbor, and places in between. So as we know, our sisters and brothers in California and other places connected to this wonderful radio station are under absolute siege, and we are afraid. We all are afraid. Detroit is in the same boat, but we would say to our sisters and brothers across the world that are suffering this, the window of opportunity, the door to progress, has just been opened. Let's get in that window. Let's go through that door. If we never had a vision about the kind of government and the kind of corporate control we have been living under, we've got it now. You can't get a mask. You can't get gloves. The healthcare providers dropping like flies because the government and their 1% co-partners have been making profits on behalf of those of us who are low income and moderate income. And now the lights are on and it becomes clear this healthcare system is teetering on the verge of collapse, and it's teetering there because we were never included in the formula that says, well, what happens if something bad comes to the United States of America? And the answer to that was, oh, well, there are no provisions for people in Detroit. There are no provisions for folks in Wayne County. There are no provisions for folks in the state of Michigan, and we've got a pretty good governor who says some of this stuff got to stop, and some of it got to stop right now. So that's where we are, Sister Margaret, in Detroit. We are up the creek without a paddle.
Well, and again, our guest is Maureen Taylor, lifelong soldier in the war against poverty with Michigan Welfare Rights, and one of the national welfare rights leaders that we are fortunate to have today. Maureen Taylor, you mentioned your governor. Donald Trump keeps picking on the governor of Michigan.
Yep.
What's up with that? What is that about? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, sure. When he gave the State of the Union address and that nonsensical event, she was the Democratic candidate that was selected to give the opposing response. And, you know, her comments were, you know, she didn't say anything ugly about that crazy person, and chose very early in her conversation. I could make comments, but I would prefer to take us in a different direction, and she gave the vision, what we would do, what we would like, and she listed those things. But then this number 45 has a track record. He doesn't like women to talk back to him. He doesn't like women to indicate that they might be smart or smarter than him. So this nutcase made it a point to say because she wasn't deferent enough, she wasn't appreciative enough, so he wasn't going to talk to her when she was asking for disaster control. And the point was very clear. You stand in the back of the line when we get ready to make things available for American citizens that live in Michigan, and we'll get to you when we get ready to get to you. So, you know, she's a pretty strong girl. She stood up, not hearing none of that, not having none of that, and so that's the basis of that showboating activity. But, you know, your listeners know this is about revealing the failure of this economic system. And that's how that conversation went. She said he was too slow. She said he wasn't paying attention. And I think everybody is clear. He was too slow, wasn't paying attention, and now that he is paying attention, the messages have come out. What, February 7th, he sent boatloads of masks and gloves and medical supplies to someplace else. And now he's surprised. So that's what the fight is about, Gretchen Whitmer. Yeah. He doesn't like smart women.
Right. And Maureen Taylor, on the whole issue of welfare and welfare reform, talking to our sisters and brothers who are consider themselves progressives, welfare mothers have been maligned by just about everybody. Lazy scroungers, not doing anything, just sucking money out of the system and not contributing anything. They are outside of the working class. They're not even considered workers. Your response to this maligning of mothers on welfare and people on welfare, because we know that since the right to welfare was taken away by Bill Clinton, that extreme poverty has increased. And women, particularly single mothers, and our children increasingly becoming homeless or being criminalized. Majority women, single mothers, fastest growing population of people going to prison. Maureen Taylor.
I'll say very quickly that the things that you have outlined and what you have described are spot on. The denigration of poor people includes women. It includes their poor children that happen to live in the same house with them. SSI recipients earning $750, $60, $70 a month, their total income. The high and rising numbers of homeless across the nation. The high and rising numbers of disabled folks receiving food stamps. This is a message to the nation. The stereotype of the welfare recipient is the one that used to be on the Aunt Jemima syrup bottle, of fat, black, red lips, and with a rag on her head. And that was the stereotype, and that's the one that people oftentimes refer to today. Welfare women work very hard. You try to figure out how to make lives and how to make ends meet on the little bit of money that's given to welfare recipients. It is an indictment against, and I hate that phrase, the richest country in the world. America's not that. We haven't been that in a long, long time. But this denigration toward low-income women, working poor women at the strip malls, at the fast food counters and whatnot, these are divisions. These are ways to go along and being able to make the lives of women and children and elderly and disabled and even veterans, to make those lives disastrous at the hands of trillions of dollars that just a couple of weeks ago went to the stock market. Nobody asked me anything about that, Miss Margaret. That was my money. Trillions of dollars went to the stock market because United Airlines, American Airlines, Delta Airlines, the big three, needed help at the schizophrenic stock market. So no, we're not all in this together, Miss Margaret. Welfare mothers are the backbone of this country. We are the ones, they are the ones that look in the neighborhoods and make certain that pedophiles are not going up and down the blocks. So we have a great deal in terms of the strength that we provide to the United States of America. And this COVID virus is making it clear, welfare mamas, listen, now is the time to push forward our vision. We want a different kind of world where this kind of thing that happens, that shows up, a virus, Ebola, the bird flu, all of this kind of stuff, that we're going to be prepared to take care of each other, as opposed to being telling people, why don't you go home and try to manufacture your own masks?
Outrageous.
What you organize to take.
Absolutely. And we just have about a minute and a half, Maureen Taylor. The time just flies when you're on the air for some reason. But what about this strategy that has been put forward of separating poor children from poor mothers or grandmothers, because whoever the primary caregiver is, you know, people talk about the poverty of children as though that is separate from the poverty of their mothers or primary caregiver. You have a quick thought on that?
Yes, that's that stereotype again. In Detroit, we were able to discover and continuously work at defeating this concept that if you are without water, your home, your property, your apartment is condemned. And so the welfare department can and have picked children up and take them and put them into the system, because the parents are not without love and whatnot, but they don't have water. It's draconian. It still continues. Now, right now, because of this virus, the governor says, turn it all on. Turn it all on. And that's a wonderful thing. But yes, that's what happens to poor and low-income children, and it can happen to kids anywhere.
That's absolutely the case. And I just want to take the opportunity to tell our listeners that there's going to be part two of a global webinar happening tomorrow. We'll put information up. It starts at 8 in the morning Pacific time. That's 10 in the morning East Coast time, and that would be 9 Central time. And it's a global webinar, and there are going to be participants from all around the world, from people who have registered are like from Australia and Thailand and Bangladesh and Peru and the UK and Ireland, even Russia. Some people have signed on to participate in it. And they're going to be discussing, also people from the Green New Deal for Europe, they're going to be discussing a campaign which is growing in parts of the world for a care income. And it's connected, of course, to what we're talking about in terms of the rights of and resources for mothers. But Maureen Taylor, we always appreciate having you on the show and
you
breaking it down so clearly for all of us. We want to send our love and solidarity to all of you strugglers on the ground in Detroit. And we also understand the significance of your work for the national conversation that's happening right now. And also wanted to mention that the Reverend Liz Theo Harris, who is a joint coordinator of the Poor People's Campaign, has said she is a proud member of the National Welfare Rights Union. And for full clarity, I'm also part of that board along with Maureen and Marion Kramer and so many incredible people
on
that union.
Powerful women.
So you stay safe, Ms. Maureen Taylor. Take care of yourself. Don't be running up all over the place, as I know you like to do. But stay safe, because we need you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and you all be safe as well. Thank you.
All righty. We are out of time. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the entire Sojourner Truth team. Our audio engineer today, Kiana Williams. Our assistant producer, Romero Funes. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. Go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Thank you for listening. Stay safe. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
We who believe in freedom cannot fail.
KBOO Portland.
Today on Wings, women around the world have traditions for reuse and recycling, but modern consumption patterns spur them to organize.
There's a river of birds in my grave.